Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic. It's my pleasure to welcome Sonia Matura to the podcast. Welcome, Sonia.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. So Sonia, it is the first time you've been on this podcast, and you've been a guest on some of Rob's Reliability Project podcasts. But it's the first time on our podcast.
Yes.
So You are the Managing Director and Senior Consultant for Strategic Reliability Solutions. Prior to that,
yes, I am.
You've been involved with lubricants. You were a lead electrical engineer at one point. Although very, very brief, what else can you fill in about your background and about yourself for our listeners?
I think my background is mainly engineering. And while I may have started in the electrical and computer field, I think I gravitated towards the reliability sector a lot because of my work with lubrication and trying to figure out the issues that a lot of people have within that sector. So while I may have gone from electrical into mechanical, I think it's all based in reliability and everything kind of comes back to reliability.
All right. Absolutely. A lot does come back to reliability. Now, with that, what we're here to talk about is lubrication and more so the degradation of lubrication. But before we dive
Yeah, very important.
Absolutely. We don't want that oil going bad or that grease going bad. Now, before we dive into that, how long have you been involved with the lubrication aspect of things?
I've been involved in lubrication for several years. My background is, I was a technical support for a global lubricant supplier in Trinidad. And during that time, I would have helped a lot of companies within the oil and gas sector, manufacturing, energy, even transportation sectors. I would have helped them to solve most of their lubrication issues. So I'm pretty well versed in almost all sectors, because all sectors would have some form of lubrication involved in it.
Yes, absolutely. Now, what we really want to talk about with lubrication here is the degradation of lubrication. So why should organizations be concerned about that to begin with?
Well, the thing about degradation is that when the lubricant starts to degrade, it's telling you something is wrong here. Something needs to be changed. Something is wrong with the environment. Something has to change before it fails. So when a lubricant fails, we have downtime. We have unplanned downtime. And it usually affects most of the components. So I think organizations should be concerned about that because there's a cost factor involved. Once you have components and the downtime and any sort of thing like that, if you understand lubricant degradation, you could actually cut that time in half, that downtime, and have your spares and everything else on hand so you don't have to experience that. So I think it's a great cost-cutting avenue that organizations should look at.
All right, excellent. Now, we use it to drive down costs, reduce those unplanned failures. How do organizations or individuals identify the degradation mechanisms that are occurring? How do we know this is actually going on?
Well, so if we can actually split lubricants into your oils and then you have your greases. Ideally for your oils, you're looking at darkening of the oils. That's almost one of the first things that you can see. And with your greases, you're looking for like inconsistencies, oil separation, excessive oil separation. But those are just some things that you can see in the field. I would always advise that you have lab tests done so that you can identify and quantify what level you are at in terms of degradation. So I would say go with your basics, and then you can identify which of the mechanisms that your lubricant is undergoing.
All right, excellent. Now, what are those different types of degradation that we would see? You know, you mentioned that we might darken up the oil. We might, if we have a grease, we might have the separation of the oil and the thickener or the base. What other types or degradation are there out there?
Well, so we have a lot of people arguing whether it's actually six types or if it's three types. And I would go with the persons who say that there are actually six types of degradation, because each type sort of produces different byproducts. And there are different conditions linked to each type for every type to, you know, happen. So you have like the oxidation, which is the most common one that you see almost throughout all of the industries. You have thermal breakdown, you have micro-dieseling, additive depletion, which is very common as well. Electrostatic spark discharge. That is actually common a lot in the turbine oils area. And of course you have contamination. And one of the main things in terms of a difference between oxidation and thermal breakdown that a lot of people don't know is that oxidation actually produces different byproducts to thermal degradation. People get them confused all of the time. But when oxidation occurs, you actually have sludge and varnish being produced, and that sort of increases your viscosity. Whereas with thermal degradation, you get like lacquer and coke, and you actually have a decrease in viscosity. So one main difference between oxidation and thermal degradation, if you had to identify it using a used oil analysis, would be a viscosity test.
All right, excellent. So you talked heavily about the oxidation and the thermal breakdown. What are those? What about the other ones?
Oh,
what's really going on with those?
Well, if you're looking at like the additive depletion, that is basically additives falling out of your lubricants, because these things tend to happen. And if you're looking at electrostatic spark discharge, that is very different in that when you have static building up inside of your lubricant, your temperature could immediately spark to over 10,000 C and your lubricant degrades almost immediately. So that is a heavy form of like degradation, and you may not even pick up on that if you're looking at your like your thermocouplers, because it's so quick and happens so fast. With microdieseling though, you need to have temperatures in excess of 1000 C. So they're all sorts of, they're a bit different, but they still have some sort of similarities with them.
Absolutely. I can see how that argument starts to shape between the three and the six, because the microdieseling, the electrostatic spark discharge, we could almost lump all those into the thermal breakdown, right? So how do all these different types of degradation impact organizations? Do they all impact organizations the same way? Are some more prevalent than others?
Well, what I would say is that it really depends on your organization, because you would have these types of degradations occur in different organizations, or you can say different components. So one of the most common one throughout all industries would be oxidation. And once that occurs, you get your sludging and your varnish. Now that would affect a power plant differently from the way that it would affect like an automotive user. So the automotive user, they could actually, you know, drain their oil, change their filters. But with a power plant, when you have oxidation, you can have those solenoid valves starting to stick, and then the varnish is almost throughout the entire system. So they need to go down and they need to clean that entire system. And depending on how long that takes, they actually lose a lot more money, because that could go in excess of like $1,000 compared to an automotive user, which they may just need to service and change their oil and their filters. So it affects different organizations differently. But your most common would be oxidation, and I would say thermal breakdown. Contamination is prevalent, but that sort of kind of goes back and forth between, are you having contamination from a user on the outside, or are you having contamination due to a process getting involved in the lubrication? So different ways.
All right, excellent. Yes, many different ways. But it's good to know that we routinely see the oxidation, the thermal breakdown, the contamination. Those yes. are the more prevalent ones Definitely. Out there. Now, how do organizations test for all these different conditions?
Ooh, yeah, that's what I would say for that is that you have your basic tests that I would call those your monthly tests. There are certain things that you should do monthly no matter what. And that would be like your viscosity. Doing a regular check of your viscosity of your oils can tell you if it's increasing, if it's decreasing, if you're seeing some sort of a trend after viscosity. You can look at your TAN or your TBN. So you can look at the acidity of your oil. If you're realizing the acidity is increasing, is that because you have oxidation going on to the background where the antioxidants are being depleted? So certain things like that you need to look at. You can look at your FTIR, your water content, your color, and just basic contamination tests for the fuel. So it really depends on what component you're looking at. So you have to design your test, or rather your frequency of your tests, depending on your criticality of your components. So I would say your basic tests are monthly. And then if you realize that you may have a problem, or if you just want to be preventive, which we always like to be, and know what's going on, you can do like your RPVOT, MPC, ruler, QSA. If you're looking at transformer oils, that's your dissolved gas analysis. And depending, again, on your criticality, you can do these like quarterly or semi-annually, because these are not cheap. They are pretty expensive. So you're going to have to work with your budget on these and know your criticality of your equipment.
All right. Excellent. So just like everything else, we're going to use the criticality of the equipment to drive which ones we're going to invest Definitely. Time in. That. Now, what role does storage and how long we store our lubricants play in this degradation?
So when you think about the storage of your lubricants, you need to ensure that you're actually storing it in the right conditions. If you don't store it in the right conditions, then they can degrade faster. Even though they're sealed, they can degrade faster. So for instance, if you have your oil drums out in the rain, it can collect water at the top and actually get into the oil. So then you introduce the contaminants in there, even though the drum is sealed. If you have greases and you have them exposed to high amounts of light or heat, they can cause oil separation, and then your grease is no longer being able to use. So what I would say for storage life is to really observe good storage practices, but also look at the expiry dates on each packaging, because each package would have an expiry date. And when these lubricants are made, they are made in their factories and whatever, so they have a particular time in which they should be used, otherwise the additives can drop out and you don't want to put that in your system. So go with your expiry dates and look at your storage conditions.
All right. Excellent. Look at the expiry dates. Beware of the storage conditions. Now, there's an expiry date on there. Is that service life, shelf life? Is there a difference between those two? What is that expiry date really telling us?
So that expiry date is the date before which you should put your lubricant into service. Now, when a lubricant is made and packaged, it is expected that it's not going to be used the next day. It will take some time to be transported to get to the site, stay on the site. So during that time, I would call that your shelf life period. So if it's sitting on the shelf for a particular amount of time, then it should be used before the expiry date that is stamped on that package. However, most expiry dates are about 4 years or so from the manufacture date, whereas your service life would be the time that the lubricant is actually in service in the components. So now there are times when lubricants could be in service for 10 or 20 years, if you're looking at turbines and fully synthetic and those sort of things. And that surpasses your shelf life. But the main difference there is that with shelf life, the lubricant is just sitting there. It's not being moved around. It's not being in use or actually serving a purpose. So additives can drop off within that shelf life. But when it's in service, the additives are not going to drop off because it's being stagnant. It may drop off because you have contamination or other issues, but there's a difference between shelf life and service life.
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out Iridicio's IBL Blended Learning for Maintenance and Reliability Professionals. This SMRP-accredited project-based curriculum will take you through all aspects of a maintenance and reliability program and provides you with all the tools you need to generate a 30 times return on investment for your organization and a set of credentials from the University of Tennessee for you. You can find out more at ibltraining.com. All right, we experienced a little bit of a technical difficulty there, but you were saying how the additives aren't falling out of suspension when the oil is in use, when it's in its service life, whereas we may see that in a storage or shelf life situation. So can you continue to elaborate on the additives not falling out of suspension while it's in service?
Yes. So while the lubricant is in service, it's actually providing its function in that whatever function it's supposed to do, whether it's hydraulic, gear, turbine, the additives would provide like your corrosion, anti-corrosion, your anti-wear, your antioxidants. Those additives will be in use while it's in service. However, if it's not in service and it's just stagnant, then you will have issues where the additives can drop off after some time.
All right, excellent. Now, in order to address that and prevent that from occurring, what can organizations do when they're receiving their lubricants to make sure that's not already the case, or we're not already receiving oil that's starting to degrade? What can we do during that receiving process?
The first thing we need to do is train our guys, train them so that they can understand what it is, the reasons behind not accepting lubricants that are degrading. Because sometimes they don't understand why they have to do all of these extra checks, and they think that it's just a strain on their time. But if they know the impact on the organization, then they can actually decide and say, okay, well, I want to actually help. I don't want to have any downtime. So I will make the extra time to check. So what they need to do is when they're receiving, they need, if you're looking at the drums, they need to make sure that there's no rusting of the product. There are no dents. There are no evidence of the drums being stored on the outside. If you're looking at the greases, then you need to check and make sure that there's no sort of leakage of the product. There is no, if you can't see the grease, that there's no sort of significant change in the consistency or the color. Because if you see a change in consistency or color, for instance, if you are supposed to receive an NLGI grade 3 and you realize that the grease that you've received is a little bit liquid, then you know something's wrong, because NLGI grade 3 is actually a bit sturdier and a bit stiffer. So look for your consistency, look for your color, changes in color. Or if you see excessive oil separation for greases, you should not use that. It's going to cause more damage. compared to if you just get new grease or new oil. Because if you think about it, the cost that you would pay for grease or for oil may be $25 to $30, but your equipment is actually worth a lot more than that. And you don't want to damage your equipment. So when they're receiving their lubricants, make sure that they pass the health checks and there are no dents or leaks or damage to packaging or anything like that.
All right, excellent. Now, if we do our incoming inspections properly, we do all that stuff right, we get it into our proper storage location, what tools are available to organizations to help manage that oil life and prevent that degradation? Is it just simply first in, first out rotation, or are there other things we can do or are available for us?
Well, it starts with first in, first out, but while we know about first in, first out, what we should also prioritize would be expiry dates. So we can't sort of combine first in, first out with the expiry dates. So we have to push the products with the closer expiry dates to be used first. We don't want those to expire on us. So you try and use those first, because when they're in service, they will last longer rather than if they were sitting on the shelf. Another thing that they can use to manage that would be just checking on the packaging. If you notice leaks, if you notice rust spots happening, things like that, if you smell very strong odors with your oils, this is with an exception to gear oil, because gear oil has a very strong odor, then you could, you know, try and get that to a lab and test it before you actually put it into the equipment. Because what I would advise as well is do base testing before you put it into the equipment. If you can, and if you do have the time, you should always send a sample to the lab just for your basic tests. Your viscosity, your TAN, contamination test, just to make sure everything is okay, and then use this into equipment, because you want to make sure you're putting the best thing in there.
All right, excellent. Now, of all the things that organizations can do, what is the one thing you think makes the biggest difference in being successful in managing this degradation of our lubricants?
Education.
Education.
We need to educate. We need to educate. We need to reinforce the purpose of why we're doing this. Because having the procedures done, having them written, those are fine. But if our guys don't know the real reason that we're pushing this entire lubricant degradation procedures, checks, and all of that, they're not going to take the time to do them properly, or they're not going to take the time to actually understand why we're doing it. So I think it goes back to education, making sure that they know the reasons behind doing it, and making sure that they know why we have to manage degradation and the consequences, not just on the organization, but on them. Because if we have some sort of shutdown because we have the lubricant oxidizing or something like that, it impacts on their time, because now they would have to be called out at certain hours rather than staying within their normal working hours. So education and letting them understand what their purpose and their role is.
All right, excellent. Education does play a large role in allowing us to manage a lot of these issues, prevent a lot of these failures. Now, if we could only tell our listeners one thing that they need to take back and do differently tomorrow, what is that one thing?
Listen to your lubricants. Just perform your checks. Look out for anything out of the ordinary in terms of if you hear anything, you're hearing the bearings rattling, you're hearing or you're seeing the lubricant changing color quickly. You know it usually doesn't do this, but you're seeing that it's having some problems. Even if you realize that your temperatures are spiking, bring it to the attention of somebody. Once you notice something out of the ordinary, just write it down, record it, bring it to the attention of somebody. Because while you may not know what a temperature increase like that may mean, somebody else can. and they can pick up that, okay, we may have some sort of thermal degradation going on here, or even ESD to that effect. So record whatever you see, anything out of the ordinary.
All right. Excellent. Excellent. Now, I definitely learned a lot about lubrication degradation today. I didn't realize that there's six different ways it degrades.
Oh, yeah.
or that there is an argument between three versus six. So I definitely learned a lot today. So I want to thank you for that. But before we go,
you're most welcome.
Where can people find out more about you, your activities, all those different things that you have going on?
So the first place that you can find me is on LinkedIn. I do a lot of LinkedIn. You can look for me at Sania Matura, and you'll find all of my posts, some articles. And if you want more information, I also have a lot of stuff on the website at strategicreliabilitysolutions.com. I have a lot of articles, knowledge snippets, reviews. So we sort of encompass a lot of things within reliability, lubrication, even cover like storage and handling. So check out the website, check out LinkedIn. You'd find a load of information.
All right. Excellent. I'll make sure to link to all of those as well, so people can easily find you, get in touch with you, all those great things. Now, one last question I always like to ask my guests is, what is your go-to resource? What's your favorite resources for stuff around lubrication?
I like to reach out to SMEs. Mainly because a lot of people, while we have stuff available online and it's nice, I like to reach out to the subject matter experts, because they actually know what's going on in the field, and they can give you a lot more inside information. So if I'm having an issue with compressors in an ammonia situation, I will try to find somebody within that area and just start talking to them and bouncing ideas off of them. Because usually they have a lot more inside information than you can get online. So I like to go straight to the source.
All right. Excellent. Great advice. Go talk to your SMEs. If you don't have a good SME at your facility, reach out to one of your lubricant providers, talk to their SMEs. Many are there to help. All right.
Yes, definitely.
All right. And with that, Sania, I want to thank you for taking the time today to talk to us about lubrication. It's definitely an important topic. Understanding how it degrades, preventing that before we get it into our equipment is absolutely vital. So thank you so much.
You're most welcome, James. I hope you have a great weekend.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the Reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.